Your conference is being recorded.
Okay, great. Kathy, I'm so glad that you're with us. I saw Kathy last week at the Transition Conference, and I'm always so thrilled when Kathy does a presentation because she does such a nice job. Kathy's going to be doing a series of three on dual sensory issues, so I'm glad that all of you received word about the calls that Kathy was going to do and that you are participating tonight. So Kathy comes to us from NDCPD at Minot State University, and I think you're going to enjoy her just as much as I do. So Kathy, why don't you just go ahead and take it away?
Okay, Denine, thanks. As I begin, I just want to make sure that my voice is coming through clear.
You are at my end.
Okay, we'll take that as good enough. So this presentation is about numeracy. Numeracy, depending on how you want to pronounce it, is kind of a fancy word that means learning about using and understanding numbers. And so I'll try to let you know what slide I'm on. I'm actually on slide number 2, which is kind of a weird-looking slide. But it is said that children with dual sensory loss, or sometimes called deaf blindness, have what they call a concomitant condition. Most of us don't use that word very often. In fact, I only use it when I'm talking about this. It's not my regular vocabulary, but it just means that the combination of the loss of vision and the loss of hearing create a complex learning situation for the child that is greater than just hearing loss plus just vision loss. And if we're going to talk about teaching about numbers, we need to understand that. So a child with a dual sensory loss usually requires a lot of modification to teach the content and some different teaching strategies. He or she can't learn from what he sees like a deaf child, and he can't learn from listening like a blind child does. He learns only by what he does, and that means that in place for him while he's waiting for others to take their turn. For this reason, small group or individual instruction becomes more critical. Large group instruction is only valuable if it can be consistently active. Things often magically appear and disappear before this child. Cause and effect are elusive. People do things to him, but not necessarily with him. There's little explanation of events before they occur. So it's important to make interactions balanced, my turn, your turn, to encourage the student to be responsive. And if our instruction is directive, that requires no response. So not all children who have dual sensory loss have absolutely no hearing and no vision. Some children are getting information from these distant senses partially, and so, but that information is often fragmented, and we just need to understand that when we talk about teaching about numbers. So I put a link into the slide where you can go and read more about students who have dual sensory loss and how they learn uniquely. But now that we've talked about that, so the next slide, slide 3, if you look, you can see that numeracy or numeracy is part of mathematics. And we really begin to learn this from birth. And we learn it academically when we're formally introduced to it in school. But we also learn it incidentally through the life skills that we're taught by our families. And people go on learning about numbers throughout their natural life. If you look at the next slide, you can see what things might look like to someone who has different degrees of vision. It's just represented here. This isn't exactly what things look like. But people have different amounts of vision, sometimes if they have a dual sensory loss. And they may have different degrees of hearing. I can't do it now in this presentation, but I did put in a link that you can look at later. It will take you to a YouTube video where they have simulated what it's like with different degrees of hearing loss. So we can try to imagine what it's like to learn that way with both conditions. Going on to slide 5, let's start talking specifically about numeracy. So most children we know learn that early in life, but we also know that more jobs than ever before are requiring the ability to understand and use numbers. And students with disabilities, particularly dual sensory disabilities, traditionally have fewer opportunities to learn about numbers than other children do, simply because incidental learning is not open to them. We know that if we're going to learn about numbers, learning it early is linked to later success, and that children with very significant sensory challenges can and do learn about numbers. So the skills involved in learning about numbers aren't really that different for a child who has a dual sensory loss. It's just that the teaching methods have to be different. So in early childhood, we're going to learn about patterns, shapes, spatial relations, comparing size, and counting objects. And on slide 7, in school, we're going to learn to identify numbers or numerals, count by rote. We're going to understand one-to-one correspondence, which means one for you, one for me, one for the other guy. Number conservation, how numbers change by combining different amounts but stay the same. How to compose and decompose numbers, the size of numbers, how to measure, all of those kinds of things. And so those can all be taught systematically. So let's talk about what that would look like. If I look at slide 9, let's talk about what learning the number 4 might look like for a person, and then at age 14, how that would change. So in one case, we might tell a story about 4 familiar items or people. At age 14, we might tell a story about 4 familiar events, a little more sophisticated. We might model signs or using sign language when counting objects at 4. But by 14, we're providing assistive technology in the form of graphic organizers and number lines. So the way schools are organizing their teaching these days, skills can be taught at any age related to the standards that are being used in that classroom. So let's go on to slide number 10. With a student who's deafblind, so we're teaching just like what we always teach at about the same time, but we know this student is going to need a lot more opportunities to make sense of the information, a lot more practice, and we're going to have to build that specifically into their familiar routine. We have a tendency when we're working with students on routines to focus on literacy and kind of leave numeracy in the dust. And so we want to be thinking about those opportunities. Math instruction traditionally relies heavily on visual information and a lot of verbal direction and explanation. So we're going to be using a lot more tactile information and directions that are given in the student's preferred mode of communication. We might have to spend a lot more time building a concept. And there are a number of visual aids that are available now for teaching students. And one of the ones that you want to become familiar with, if you're not familiar already, is something that was actually invented by a general education teacher called Slide Around Math Manipulatives. And I put the link to that in your PowerPoint so you can look at those. These types of manipulatives can really help bring this information to students both visually and tactically, and it's organized in a way that it's easier to make sense for many students. If you look at slide number 11, just drawing on the research, if we're going to teach numeracy, we want to do what works. So we want to use evidence-based strategy. So what does that mean? A student will need explicit instruction in numbers. That's going to need to include some systemic prompting, which is then stated. And it needs to be embedded within the natural routines, both at home and at school. The information about numbers has to be contextually meaningful to the student. A student who's deafblind is going to have a harder time picking up some of the abstract idea of numbers. So we want to put it into a context that's familiar and that means something to the student, not necessarily to us. The information needs to be taught in smaller chunks. They get more repetition and practice, and continued opportunities to build those concepts using age-appropriate materials as the student grows. Let's talk about how that plays out when I talk about natural routines. So many early concepts for numbers really also involve understanding what words mean. So if I am supporting a student who's got a dual sensory loss, and I place a glass of milk in their hand, that milk might taste and smell good, and it might be familiar if the child's had milk before. But the child may not be aware that other people are drinking milk too. They may not be aware of where the milk was stored or how it got into the glass in the first place. So rather than just serving the milk, the student might benefit from hand-in-hand support to feel the pouring process with two glasses, one for him and one for a peer or a sibling, a teacher, or a family member. Different amounts of milk could be included, the opportunity to eventually to ask for more and then get more themselves using an easy pour pitcher. This activity also provides a chance to teach the concept of oneness and two-ness and one-to-one correspondence, one for me and one for you. But unless care is taken to introduce numeracy into these ordinary events, the concepts may not be learned. So, there's also just a lot of jargon when it comes to learning adapt numbers. So in slide 13, I took a little bit of a crack at that. These are some things that educators might say when we're talking about numeracy and what that means. So if we say target early numeracy skills, skills like the concept of more, shapes, sizes, counting, that kind of thing. When we say use systematic prompting and feedback, that would be something like we show the child one finger, we have them feel it, we give a sign for one, we ask the child to repeat it systematically. One strategy that's very evidence-based is to use story-based lessons throughout the day. And for a student who's deafblind, often those need to be tied to their routine. So we're going to go to Dairy Queen and get 2 ice cream cones. And then we go to Dairy Queen and we get 2 ice cream cones. I would choose that lesson any day of the week. If we say use number identifiers, that might mean a card with a number written on it that the student can display or show to a peer or the teacher. Show me the number 2. And finally, we want to use embedded instruction. So if we're working with a student on learning adding, let's say, or combining sets, combining 2 amounts, then we want to work those kinds of activities into each of the subjects, whether that's gym class, or art, or reading, not just teaching it at math time. I'm going to go on to slide 14 and talk a little bit about accommodations. We've said there's a need for more tactile resources. And this is this photo in slide 14 was taken from a wonderful website called Pathways to Literacy, where we're just using a muffin tin or 2 muffin tins that have been put together along with some discs to work with the student on making one side the same as the other. This can be used to show braille dots for numbers. It can just be used to reinforce one-on-one correspondence. So you will find that this website, as well as a lovely little site called Pinterest, it's full of really cool ideas of how to teach numbers to kids using objects and activities. The thing that we have to remember is where the student is cognitively. So an activity like this is going to be unfamiliar, probably, to the student when it's first introduced. And so we can't expect them to catch on until it's become familiar and they know what to do with it. And that is at the point where learning can really start happening. If we go on to slide number 15, I put the link to Pathways to Literacy, and it takes you through systematically quite a few concepts related to numeracy that can be introduced. So you can see in the picture here that this one has been put together to involve matching for big and little. You can see that the colors are bright and they stand out clearly against the background. You can see that the color might be different. If a student has some vision, they can see the colors. But the objects are similar. One is big and one is little. It is important when you're teaching with objects with students who are deafblind not to always use miniature objects, because they often don't represent the real world very well. But in this case, they're not really being used to represent the real world. They're just there for comparison purposes. So it's okay. So I would encourage you to check out that website. When students start grasping the idea of amount and counting, then we begin to go on and teach bigger numbers and place values. And there's a number of different kinds of raised charts. This is also from the Path to Literacy website. You can see the student is putting the numbers in. And there are many different learning activities that can be done with a raised chart like this, which is sitting on a desk. One of the things that happens to us in schools is we often teach concepts to the whole class at one time. So we're teaching in large groups, and the student who's deafblind isn't going to be able to get that information or make sense of it very well. So then the directions have to be repeated on an individual basis, and the activity has to be changed to one that will make sense for that student. When we start doing that, it can make that student appear to be doing something quite different than everyone else is doing. So it's important in our teaching, in our whole groups, to have a wide variety of materials on hand as we're teaching, so that it doesn't look strange to have just one student using them. And in fact, this kind of chart that you see here, which is helpful for this student who has some vision and some hearing, but not a lot, would also be good for other students. And so we're not singling that student out. So we're teaching numbers in the way we always teach them. We have students learn to count by making signs. We have them match numbers of things to the numeral and trace it. We do all those kinds of activities. When a student is a little farther along, we can introduce the idea of using an abacus. A student may need to be touching tactily manipulatives for much longer. You can get a talking calculator. You can mark the keys so that there's a distinct tactile symbol for each one, but that may still be a little bit too abstract for a student, particularly when you push enter and the answer magically appears. That might not make sense for a student with a dual sensory loss. And the link that I put in your PowerPoint has some systematic instructional plans for teaching students how to use an abacus. There are also materials, as you can see in slide number 18, for teaching advanced math concepts. So there is a curriculum that's available at the Perkins Learning Center. This curriculum was originally designed for students who are blind, but it can be adapted for a student who is deafblind because it has a lot of tactile features, as you can see in the picture. And there is a specific system of notation that's been developed for people who are blind noting those advanced math concepts. So not every child who has a dual sensory loss will learn up to this level, but many can. And if they have some vision and some hearing, that helps. Also, a lot of times in classes, we use demonstration or we explain about a math concept, and that's going to be harder for a student who's deafblind. So I want to draw your attention to they're going to understand better doing a learning activity or doing something within the routine or a small group rather than having a teacher up in front of the class who's saying something they can't hear or showing something they can't see very well. But there are videos specifically for teaching math concepts that have been adapted, that are captioned and have been adapted for use with students who are blind or deaf. And so I put a link to those, and that can be used to subsidize what the general ed teacher might be introducing in a classroom situation. So that's everything that I have to share on numeracy. It's not actually a well-researched subject. At what time, we often just assume students couldn't learn these skills. And now we know better, but we have to start when they're very young and start introducing those concepts tactually. And as part of what we do to teach language and have it embedded in routine. So those are the main strategies So that's all the content I have. Usually I have like 60, 70 slides for these, but I didn't make that many because there's just not that much to say about it. So I'm hoping I'm not letting you down, Deneen, after that big introduction, but I would be happy to try to answer questions. You know, what you do in a given situation really depends a lot on the age of the student, how much vision or hearing they do have, what underlying concepts they already have. So it's difficult to just say, well, this is what you do, poof, for everyone, because it doesn't work that way. So if anybody has any questions or thoughts,
don't be shy. Kathy, do you want to tell them a little bit about the dual sensory project that you're working on?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So North Dakota's had a dual sensory project for some time, but last year, the person who had been supporting that project was resigning or retiring, and so the state asked us to apply for the grant. So it's a federal grant that it goes to a project like ours in each state. And so we work with schools to develop a census of how many students in the state have a dual sensory loss. And once we get that, I start sending out information and materials to families or trying to contact them in different ways. Not all of the families whose kids are on the census are at a point where they are going to respond to somebody from a project they don't know. They're going to feel most comfortable talking with their child's teacher or the specialist in hearing or the TVI for vision. But slowly but surely, we've been contacting families around the state. We have a lot of resources that we can bring to bear. Many of these kiddos who have a dual sensory loss have intensive learning needs, and working with a student like this can be a once-in-a-career experience for a teacher. So the student might transfer to a school with a teacher who just doesn't have a background in this. And one of the things I've seen over the years is that we tend to just keep trying to muddle through, do the best we can for students in the IEP process and in our classrooms, and we forget to reach out to resources, especially ones that may be unfamiliar. So recently, for example, we went to a school and introduced the school to the concept of person-centered planning for a student with dual sensory loss, and now we're following up with that student by bringing in a number of specialists for the school to consult with and develop a better communication system. We were able to refer that school to a way to get assistive technology at no cost to the school for a student who's deafblind. In another case we're working on, we're working with an older student. We've linked them up to the the Helen Keller National Center, which can follow students who are deafblind into adulthood. And now that family is pursuing a number of immersion experiences for their child. We were able to send three families to the National Charge conference in Texas this past summer. CHARGE is a rare syndrome that usually results in a dual sensory loss. And so that would have been beyond the means of some of the families. We're also providing training statewide on deafblindness through the OHOA project out of the National Center on Deafblindness, so that people can acquire the skills to work with students like this, either just on their own, just to get the information, or for credit. And through our project, the teachers or a parent pays for to take the class for credit, and then we reimburse them for it. So there's really no cost. So those are some of the things that Project is doing. We're collaborating with North Dakota Vision Services on a family weekend that will include some families of kiddos with dual sensory loss. So we're just getting our feet wet, and we're doing these learning calls and trying to reach out as much as we can.
Kathy, is there a number to where, did you have that on the slide, to where the folks can get a hold of you for some technical assistance or?
Mm-hmm. I do. They can go to our website. Let's see. Did I put my picture in here, and then I never used the design piece, so it covered up the information. That was not too bright. Oh, well. So the phone number where I can be reached is 701-858-3048. And you can contact me at kathy.harstead@minotstateu.edu. Any questions from the group out there? Now that I've blithered on for a while. I'd be interested to know if we have any parents on the call.
We do.
And if they would be interested in talking about how learning about numbers has gone for their son or daughter.
Any of the parents? Go ahead.
What you're working on. No worries. Do we have some professionals on the call? We probably do. Well, everybody's pretty quiet, Deneen. I don't know if anybody has any more questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Kathy before we end for the night? Kathy, I have it right here. So the next one that in January that you're doing one in January and one in February. Do you want to describe those a little bit?
Well, no, because then I'd have to open my calendar, Deneen. Hang on a minute. I've forgotten what I'm doing when. So I have to get on the, do you have it on your calendar? It's going to take me a minute to open the email on this. But I will try. Ah, okay. Here we go.
January 16th, it's on digging into strategies to help children with dual sensory impairments learn about reading. And then in February, it's about strategies to prepare children with dual sensory impairments for life after high school.
Ah, transition. Okay. So I'll actually probably have a lot more content in those just because there's a lot more known. We're still playing catch up on numeracy.
Great.
Special educators, we don't know everything.
So does anybody have any comments at all, things that have worked or not worked in your school setting? Because I know we have several teachers on the call as well. Anybody want to make any comments about that? Okay. Well, with that, we're going to end the call. And thanks, Kathy, for teaching us about numeracy this evening. And we look forward to the call in January and February.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye. Night, everybody.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 5 minutes.